You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including a new voting official in Shasta County and the evolution of train culture in Dunsmuir. I'm News Director Eric Newman.
I'm Roma Battaglia, Science, Environment, and Politics reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, Public Safety and Health reporter.
And I'm James Kelly, JPR's news intern for the summer.
So just right off the bat, we do have some breaking news this morning about a court case about homelessness. This morning, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of the city of Grants Pass in a long-running case about homelessness. In the court's decision, Justice Neil Gorsuch said the city's enforcement of its public camping laws do not violate the Eighth Amendment. That basically means that they decided that the laws regulating camping on public property don't constitute cruel and unusual punishment, which is prohibited by the Eighth Amendment. So attorneys for homeless people in the case had argued that the city's ordinances effectively make it a crime to be homeless when there aren't enough places for people to find shelter. It is important to note that there are other rules that are specific to Oregon about camping in public, but this ruling overall is expected to have widespread implications for how cities across the country can enforce rules about preventing people from camping in public. So JPR reporter Jane Vaughn has been following this case. She's out in Grants Pass right now, so she's going to be doing a story about that we will have this weekend. In other breaking news, JPR has a new addition to our newsroom. James Kelly is joining us for the summer as our intern from the Charles Snowden Program for Excellence in Journalism. Good morning, James.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
So where are you coming from?
I just graduated this year from Oregon State University at the Corvallis campus, and I moved down this weekend. So I'm here now, and I've been in Corvallis for the last 2 years, and it feels great to be somewhere new.
And so what kind of journalism outlets did you work at when you were at OSU?
So I worked for two journalism outlets at OSU. There's Beaver's Digest, which is the student-led magazine, lifestyle magazine. It rules, little shout-out. This past year, I was the city editor for OSU's The Daily Barometer, which is our student-led newspaper, and I handled things like legislation, local business, housing, and assigned writers to all sorts of different areas, which is really great work, and I love doing it. And now I'm excited to kind of just do what's next, you know?
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you. Anything you're especially interested in focusing on here in here at JPR for the next 2.5 months?
Well, it is approaching wildfire season, so I feel like that will be especially topical coverage, and I am excited definitely to do that. But just be somewhere new, I feel like there's a lot of catching up for me to do in this area, and I'm excited to get acquainted. So, you know, just filling in where you all need me to be is kind of where I'm excited to be. So, yeah.
All right. Great. Well, we're excited to have you. So next, we're going to turn to you, Roman. You went down to Redding last week to cover the appointment of a new clerk for Shasta County, who also oversees elections. But this new clerk has no elections experience, and we have a presidential election that's only 5 months away. We're going to talk to you about your reporting, but first, let's hear your story to find out more about this new clerk.
By a 3-2 vote from county supervisors last week, Thomas Toller was the one chosen as the next county clerk and registrar of voters. Now semi-retired, Toller said during his public interview that he spent 6 years in a monastery and studied theology before his career as a lawyer.
I think like a lawyer, and I think that can bring a good skill set to this job because it is so heavily dependent on codes and regulations.
During his legal career, Toller has spent much of it being a deputy district attorney in Shasta County, most recently from 2012 to 2017. Toller will now lead a department that's faced attacks by election deniers and growing political divisiveness in recent years. Toller said he's been in leadership positions before.
I am not by nature a micromanager, but I am someone who will monitor progress and definitely expect accountability.
Toller doesn't have much experience with elections, other than helping in a past campaign for district attorney. But when asked about the county's election system, Toller said he would support a controversial move to hand count all ballots in future elections.
I mean, it was good enough for years and years, I think it's a system that's capable of being implemented and observed for transparency and fairness.
Hand counting ballots has been shown to be more time consuming, more expensive, and less accurate than using machines. Shasta County supervisors attempted to hand count elections last year, but their efforts were thwarted by a new state law banning the practice in nearly all elections. But how often are clerks chosen without any experience? 2 out of the 11 other clerks in nearby counties came into the position without a background in elections. Experienced clerks, including Rochelle Long in Klamath County, say elections are very difficult to run even when you have many years under your belt. Long says there's a lot going on behind the scenes that the public isn't aware of.
The former clerk used to say, "We look like we're ducks floating on water, and underneath we're paddling like hell."
Dan Loomis is the clerk from Douglas County who was also appointed without elections knowledge. He says that an inexperienced clerk will need a lot of support from staff, especially when there's only 5 months until the next presidential election.
Empower those folks that are in the office that work for you. You believe in that, you know, they want to succeed just as much as you want to succeed.
The two county supervisors who voted against appointing Toller wanted instead to pick Joanna Franciscat, the assistant county clerk with 16 years of experience. She's been running the office for months after the retirement of Kathy Darling Allen. Franciscat says this interview process was difficult, but she presented the best version of herself.
Honestly, I feel at peace because I know that my integrity, my leadership style, and how I conduct myself meets my standards.
The Shasta County clerk isn't usually appointed by supervisors. It's elected by the people. The former clerk, Kathy Darling Allen, was elected 5 times since 2004. 2 years ago, she won almost 70% of the vote, more than any other local candidate got. California state law doesn't allow for calling a special election to fill vacant elected positions, other than county supervisors and superior court judges. Toller was the first choice of only one supervisor, Board Chair Kevin Cry. Cry said he believes Toller will be able to stand up to criticism.
"I believe there is one person, that would be Tom Toller, that would be able to come in with a fresh set of eyes, processes, be steadfast in returning, possibly for the first time ever anywhere in the last 4 years, some level of transparency and communication."
During the public meeting, Cry convinced 2 other supervisors to vote for Toller. Supervisor Mary Rickert, one of the 2 dissenting votes, said she's worried that someone so inexperienced will be unable to successfully pull off an election that's rapidly approaching. She told the other supervisors that it'll be their fault if something goes wrong.
"This is your legacy, and this is where you're bringing Shasta County. And this is whatever happens today is going to have far-reaching ripple effect on the county and the people of California, and if our voters will be disenfranchised ultimately."
Toller says he'll be talking to every member of the election staff to find out what needs to happen to ensure a smooth transition. That includes working alongside Franciscat, who is still committed to becoming the next county clerk. That position will be up for election in 2 years. Roman Battaglia, JPR News.
All right. So, Roman, the candidates for this open clerk position were interviewed completely in public, which is kind of unusual for board appointments like this. What was the atmosphere like in the board chambers in Redding?
Yeah, as is usual in Shasta County, it was a little, you know, heated, maybe a little bit less than normal just because it was this kind of interview format rather than a public meeting. I mean, the supervisors kept trying to keep people from clapping or booing during the interviews, which is kind of common during these meetings. And a lot of the members of the public were really passionate about the candidate they supported. Here's just a little taste of what was happening in the chambers. This is when supervisors were casting their votes to appoint Toller.
Supervisor Garland?
No.
Supervisor Jones?
Yes.
Supervisor Cry?
Yes.
Supervisor Kelstrom?
Yes.
And Supervisor Rickert?
No.
Passes 3-2. So at this time, Monica Fugit and the CEO, David Rickert.
You have just f***ed our county.
No.
Now that we know that Thomas Toller was the first choice of only one of the county supervisors, Board Chair Kevin Cry, but Cry managed to convince the 2 other right-wing supervisors to vote with him. Did they have anything to say about Toller?
Yeah, they didn't really have much to say, other than, you know, pretty much that he's a nice guy and he's local. Chris Kelstrom said he liked him because he was local, you know, and Patrick Jones said that Cry's ultimatum that he presented when, you know, forcing them to vote for it is just part of the job.
"We have to make a decision, and Tom is a good guy. I've known him. I like his thinking, and so you don't have to twist my arm too hard for a really very good individual that has a lot of history here in Shasta County."
Yeah, I'll be honest, the appointment of Toller was kind of surprising for a lot of people, myself included. A lot of people thought this third candidate, Clint Curtis, would be appointed, who had been advocating to get rid of machines and had been favored by Jones and Kellstrom.
Okay, so what about the other two supervisors who voted against him? What did they have to say?
Yeah, their major concerns about Toller were pretty much twofold. The first were his obvious inexperience in elections administration. They're concerned because we're so close to November, he's going to have to rely a lot on staff to get this done. And that includes relying on Franciscat, who obviously didn't get the job. There's also worries that there could be an exodus of staff, leaving the office without a capability to run the election. Franciscat has said that she is staying in the office, but, you know, other staff could leave depending on what happens when Toller takes charge.
Okay.
The other thing is possible partisanship. He obviously supported Eric Jensen in his failed 2022 campaign for district attorney. He says he'll be able to separate his political opinions in the job, but we'll have to see again, you know, how he performs once he takes office.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks, Roman. Justin, we're going to turn to you next. So you reported on an annual celebration in Northern California of trains and the rail industry. Can you tell us about why you thought that this was interesting enough to attend?
Yeah, so the town of Dunsmuir, they hold this annual celebration and parade called Railroad Days, and that basically celebrates the town's history with the railroad industry. Dunsmuir is this super cute town in Siskiyou County. It's in this forested valley where there was once a diversion point for trains. That's where trews and engines and stuff were swapped. And back in the day, basically, nearly everyone in town had some relationship with the rails. Either they worked on the tracks or had a family member that did. So the town's been having this Railroad Day celebration since 1941 to celebrate that history. And there's been some breaks, like during World War II, and it's changed its name. It was once Canyon Days for a bit, but they're back to celebrating as Railroad Days. And I thought this was interesting because of what someone that attended a couple years told me. And what they said was that when they went, they noticed there was this other population also celebrating trains alongside the town. And these were train hoppers. So people traveling by train illegally, pretty dangerously. They'll hop in boxcars and get to see a really unique side of this country. I've come across these kind of travelers before in the U.S. when I've done my own traveling and just thought it was an interesting group of people, and this could be a good opportunity to meet some of them and just see why this is their calling.
So tell me about this subculture and your time experiencing that side of Railroad Days.
So on the same weekend as Railroad Days, the Black Butte Center for Railroad Culture holds concerts and a kind of get-together that train hoppers will attend. They'll actually travel from around the country to get here during that weekend. And that center is really interesting. It's in Weed. It's about 15 miles from Dunsmuir. It's on 50 acres of forest and has all these resources about trains, but a lot of more the underground elements of train culture, like labor organizing aspects and train folk music. They have this library on train culture, this exhibit on Utah Phillips that's inside a boxcar that Phillips actually lived in, which his family donated. And the center also celebrates the train hopping culture and the history of the American hobo. So the boxcar riders that are kind of now just a part of this country's mythology. Just to be clear, the Black Butte Center for Railroad Culture isn't encouraging anyone to hop in boxcars, but they welcome these travelers at this time of year and throw this event. And they had some folky bands playing inside a boxcar on the property. I camped out in the forest with these travelers, and it was really fun. It was a good opportunity to learn about what motivates them. For locals in Dunsmuir, the rails were this historic relic of economic opportunity. But for the travelers I spoke with, it was more about freedom. But they also share this deep respect for trains. Here's one train hopper I spoke with who goes by the name of Turtle.
These tracks cut through America. These are the veins of America. It's not the rivers, bro. It's the tracks. America is corrupt, but America was built on railroads. So explore your railroads. Get to know America. That's real America. And it's beautiful. Straight up.
So at night, they'll have these shows, and then the next day, they'll all head into Dunsmuir.
Okay, so there was kind of this collision of cultures happening in Dunsmuir Dunsmuir during this train event. How do locals feel about that?
There's kind of mixed feelings. Some locals are sort of wary. These travelers look different than the usual family crowds, and someone from my story called them edgy. That sounds about right. They have tattoos, usually these like dirty bibs, and they just look like they've been riding the rails. But they also support the town when they come through. They play music and busk. They spend their money. Not all the travelers are sort of living rough. I spoke with a couple from Canada who drove to Eugene and then just hopped a train for the last leg of their journey, just sort of out of tribute. And they were buying coffee and beer at a nice cafe the town has, so they contribute.
Okay, well, thanks so much. That full story can be found on our website for folks who want to see some photos and hear interviews that Justin did down in Dunsmuir. That is going to do it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments about our coverage and suggestions for things that we should cover on our news tip line on the JPR homepage. You can find this program and others on our website at jeffexchange.org.